The driver of the car that plowed into pedestrians at New York's Times Square is in custody. Richard Rojas, a 26-year-old Bronx resident, drove his car against traffic on the sidewalk on 7th Avenue in the busy center of Manhattan, killing an 18-year-old woman and injuring 22 more people.
Big showdown here. This is a big vote, and given that President Trump is on his way en route to Saudi Arabia, and again, this is shaping up to be one of the biggest elections for Iran since the Islamic Revolution in 1979. The two key contenders who are standing out of the four that are still in play, Ibrahim Raisi, the conservative cleric, and Hassan Rouhani, who, mind you, came through here just a couple of hours ago to vote.
Chinese e-commerce giant Alibaba on Thursday showing it still has a firm grip on the country's consumers despite China's slowing economy. Quarterly revenue jumping 60% from last year, faster than Wall Street expected. Founder Jack Ma attracting a growing middle class with premium products from outside China's borders, despite the company being known as a haven for counterfeit goods.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the program. Today is Friday. It is May 19th, 2017, 5:12 in the morning. Glad to have you here for our last show of the week, last business day of the week. Another edition of The Opening Bell. We will later in the program tell you a little bit about how you might be able to skip some of those fees on airlines. Rick Senior will be with us for our normal Friday conversation. We'll bring in Paul Nolte here in just a moment. But first, let's go to the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk. Dow futures are pointing toward a positive open later on Wall Street, up about 25 points. NASDAQ up 13. S&P is up about 5. Crude oil is trading a little higher this morning as well, $49.75 a barrel, up almost 1%. The markets from around the world, Asian stock markets mostly lower today as investor worries remain globally about the U.S. political turmoil and the investigation into possible Russian coordination with President Trump's campaign. Markets also being shaken by a deepening political crisis in Brazil, where the president there is facing calls for his resignation amid allegations of corruption. Stocks and currency have plunged there in that emerging market. U.S. shares rallied yesterday, partly cheered on by positive reports on jobs and earnings from a few big companies. Fears, though, still growing that Trump may have trouble enacting his agenda, which includes tax cuts, other business-friendly policies, and infrastructure. The dollar gained against the yen and the euro. Some other news this morning, making good on a campaign promise, the Trump administration has formally told Congress it intends to renegotiate the North American Free Trade Agreement with Canada and Mexico. U.S. Trade Representative Robert Lighthizer sent a congressional note yesterday, starting 90 days of consultations with lawmakers over how to revamp the pact. Talks with Canada and Mexico can begin after that. Toyota, Subaru, Mazda, and BMW have reached a proposed settlement that would compensate owners of nearly 16 million vehicles for money that they lost due to the massive recall of Takata airbags. In documents filed with the federal court yesterday, the automakers agreed to pay $553 million to compensate owners and widen their efforts to make sure vehicles are being repaired. Well, it has generally been sort of a tumultuous week in the economy. Paul Nolte is here, Senior Vice President, Portfolio Manager at Kingsview Asset Management, as he is every Friday. Good morning, Paul. Welcome in.
Good morning, Steve. Nice to be here.
It's good having you. The situation we saw Wednesday with the VIX Volatility Index up 20%. Thankfully, it recovered a little bit. There's still some nervous investors out there.
A little bit of angst in the markets. When you say it's up 20%, it was down to below 10, the VIX reading, which is the lowest it's been in 30 years. So we're coming off of extraordinarily low levels of volatility. This is only the first, this is the, Wednesday was the first 1% move, a greater than 1% move in since the election. So since September, I think, was the last one. In this year, we've only seen a handful of moves that were really even more than half of 1%. So the markets have been very quiet, very calm all year long. So it was kind of a wake-up call for investors that the political environment is still very, very volatile, and the markets are now starting to reflect that a little bit.
You, like me, watch a lot of this stuff and pay attention to various sources of information. See if I'm right on this. This is the first week, really, with all of the noise that we've been hearing about Trump over the last couple months, that I've been hearing the impeachment word among investors. I actually heard that a couple of times this week.
It's been out there. And again, that's more of the political process, and they've got to have some findings. That's why they're getting the special counsel together. A special prosecutor in place. We're, I think, a long way away from that. I think, again, we're jumping to confusions, not necessarily conclusions yet. And that's, again, the markets are apt to sell first or buy first and ask questions later. So that's part of the reason why we've seen the markets recover some yesterday. Futures are up again today. So I'm putting this a little bit more in the category of Brexit or even Trump's election, where we saw a lot of volatility that a couple weeks later, we're back to where we were prior to the event.
It's important to remember, too, just taking politics out of it. We are riding a recovery that's multi-years into it. Something has to give eventually, right?
Eventually, and we're not close to that. I mean, we've talked about it for a long time. We're looking for the next recession, and right now we don't see it in the numbers. The economy continues to bump along at about a 2% annual clip. Inflation, not really an issue. Wage growth is reasonable. Valuations are a little bit high. Interest rates are going to stay relatively low. So that environment, I think, is very good for investors, certainly over the short term, if not intermediate term.
And we mentioned in the opening the problems going on in Brazil. How is what's happening there impacting the rest of the world, including us?
It's having a big impact, certainly, on the emerging market. So you look yesterday at a lot of the emerging market mutual funds, they were down anywhere between 2 and 3%, while our markets were up about 0.5%. So on a relative basis, a huge decline. We're seeing a little bit of recovery this morning. They're still down about a percentage point. We're up a little bit here. That has an impact. Brazil is a larger percentage of the emerging markets. They have been recovering economically for a while. This is the second issue that they've had with the president. They removed the former president a year and a half ago, had reforms put in place, and we're now stumbling again in Brazil. So it has some ripple effect around the world, but not a huge impact. But it points up some of the dangers of emerging markets is that the political risk is much, much higher there than it is in the developed markets.
And so the impact would be immediately what? Look down at your coffee mug this morning. Is it coffee prices and
coffee,
other commodities?
Yeah, some of the commodity prices are coming down in Brazil. And certainly you'll see some benefit there as you have your morning coffee.
All right, Paul, hang on with us. We'll be back with Paul Nolte of Kingsview Asset Management as the opening bell continues on this Friday.
From ABC News Wall Street Now, investors rallied yesterday on positive employment data, but it followed the worst drop in 8 months. The Dow Jones added 56 points to close at 20,663. The S&P 500 rose 8.5 points. The NASDAQ Composite was up 44. Toyota, Subaru, Mazda, and BMW will pay $533 million for money lost to the massive recall of Takata airbags. 16 million customers will be compensated for things like lost wages or child care expenses while they were taking their vehicles in for repairs. Canada's government is warning that it could cancel a planned purchase of 18 Boeing fighter jets because of U.S. Commerce Department anti-dumping investigations against Canadian plane maker Bombardier. And Facebook will carry a live Major League Baseball game each Friday, starting with Colorado at Cincinnati today. The Facebook package of 20 games will use the broadcast feed of one of the competing teams. Jim Ryan, ABC News.
You're listening to The Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
Good morning. Welcome back to the program. It's 523. We're on with Paul Nolte this morning of Kingsview Asset Management in Chicago. Paul, some economic data that's come in over the last week or so is sort of uneven. Tell us a bit about that and how that might impact the June Fed meeting.
Yeah, it has been uneven, and it's been coming in actually below expectations. So there's actually a indicator put out by Citigroup that looks at whether it's above or below expectations. And a lot of the economic data has been below expectations over the last month and a half or so. But again, it goes back to the point that I was making earlier and the fact that the economic growth is still okay. We saw the Philly Fed yesterday. The numbers were a little bit better. Industrial production was a little bit better. Housing market a little bit worse. But again, on a month-to-month basis, those numbers tend to jump around. When you look at it on a year-over-year basis, those trends are not bad and still indicative of economic growth.
Still a slow growth, though.
Slow growth, but growth nonetheless.
Yeah. The chances then for the meeting in June are down from 100%. I know we keep talking about this stuff.
Yeah, but we do. And actually, there's going to be a couple Fed officials out talking today. Yeah. So it'll be interesting to hear if they reference anything that's gone on this week. The Fed has historically been very cautious about raising rates when the markets are jumpy. So they did not raise rates in front of the Brexit vote. They did not raise rates in front of the Trump election when the markets were very concerned, down a fair amount. So if the markets continue to decline, starting with Wednesday's decline, we could see the Fed maybe step aside, maybe not at the June meeting, but certainly later in the year they could put things on hold. But again, that's not the call that we're making right now.
I remember at the beginning of the year we were all talking about maybe four rate hikes this year. That seems kind of unlikely now.
It does. I think June's pretty well baked in the cake. Later on in the year, we'll, as the Fed has said often, we'll take the data as it comes.
So I'm probably two then this year.
Two for sure, and we'll see about three.
Well, given everything that we've been talking about this morning, what should we be doing with our portfolios? The political turmoil, the not-so-good economic data, all of that stuff, where should we be going?
Well, you know, one of the things that we've done over the last couple months, as the markets have gone up significantly, the equity markets, is take a little bit of money off the table, put it over on the bond side of the house, and take our profits. But again, really not making big changes to overall asset allocations. So the fact that the markets have gone down 1.5%, beginning part of the week, we were at all-time highs. So it's a lot of interesting stuff to talk about, certainly, and, mm-hmm. and read. But as far as the portfolio goes, you really don't want to be making a lot of decisions based on what's coming out of Washington. It's more important to see what's coming out of the economic data, and it's still decent. And the markets are still in a healthy state, I think, over the next probably 2 to 3 months or so.
Did you see anything in earnings this week that concerned you or made you happy?
You know, it was interesting to see Walmart. Walmart earnings, and we've talked about the Amazon effect, and Walmart picked up 60% growth in their online sales. So they're making a big effort to take on Amazon, and it's showing up in their bottom line. The other retailers are struggling. We saw a little bit of a pickup from Ross Stores and a couple of the other ones. But again, it's all about Amazon when it talks about retail.
Yeah, although, again, give credit to Walmart because I have family members who do a lot of the price comparisons. And if you find a deal on Amazon, it might be worth going over to Walmart and looking because they're really fighting neck and neck to bring prices down.
It still pays to comparison shop.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
So what do you got planned for the weekend? Anything good?
We're going to see if the weather holds up. We might run around to the other side of the lake in Michigan and play in the water. But the water temperature, I hear, is only in the 50s, and the weather forecast is not necessarily so favorable.
Yeah, you might need a wetsuit, and I heard about maybe some wet snow over there.
I hope no snow.
Well, Paul, have a great weekend. We'll see you again next Friday.
Thank you.
Paul Nolte from Kingsview Asset Management in Chicago.
WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome back to the program. As we get ready for the big Memorial Day weekend, the TSA has announced it's adding more officers at airports across the country to deal with the influx of travel. More than 234 million passengers will take to the airlines this summer, according to the statistics that are coming out. Last summer, there were about 224, so a big jump in passengers coming for this summer. We thought we'd bring in Rick Cini this morning to talk more about aviation and travel. We do that for you every Friday. One of the things, Rick, good morning, we want to talk about today is there another incident on airlines It seems like weekly now we're seeing these things. We had the rabbit die. We had the forcible removal. We had the woman who was forced to go bathroom in a cup, apparently. And then this past week, a birthday cake incident. What's going on with these airlines?
Yeah, I think it's probably the latter. You know, 2 million passengers flying each day. I think these kind of things actually happen for many, many years. It's just the fact that everybody now whips out their smartphone and videotapes things. And now, once you have these things, it's sort of now can you actually contrive something in some cases? So, but in many of these cases, it's clear that they weren't handled well. No matter if you look at the video tells the story. Sometimes the video doesn't have the entire video, it only has half of it, so it's hard to tell what the precursor was. But generally, you're talking about 2 million passengers each day. If one incident occurs, or two incidents occur each week, we're talking about so many zeros, 0.00001 percentage of issues, but they get blown up exponentially in social media. And I think that's going to continue to happen for many months until airlines start to retrain their employees that on how to handle people with cell phones and how and essentially how to better handle customer service, which the backdrop isn't great. Every flight's completely full. They're reducing legroom on new aircraft they're buying. So they're shooting themselves in the foot to some degree.
Yeah, and in defense of the airlines, too, this latest case, I know you and I have talked in the past about things you do and don't do when you're on an airplane. Bringing a birthday cake and trying to check it in the overhead bin, is that even acceptable?
Yeah, well, I think you can actually do food. I'm surprised it actually made it through TSA because depending on how moist that cake was, right, it could be considered liquid. This particular one, the story is that it was fine that they had it on the plane, but they actually tried to put it in a bin that had either the life raft or some oxygen or some sort of equipment, and that's what started the issue. That's the airline story. Of course, the passenger has a different story, so it's hard to tell what's actually correct, but at least JetBlue is sticking with their story for the moment.
Yeah, and you know, I remember when they used to sneak in files in cakes and prisons for people to escape. I mean, who knows what could have been in that cake?
Yeah, so in general, you're taking your, and apparently this was a very expensive cake from a very expensive bakery, so you're taking in apparel. If you bring any type of food, especially large amounts of food on the plane, it's easily going to be intercepted at TSA.
You know, as some of the drama and the noise sort of subsides, I've heard a couple of sane people say, you know, maybe we should stop serving alcohol in airports and on planes, because we've seen a couple of those fights too on aircraft. You think that's a good idea?
Well, you know, I think, again, that's a huge revenue source for both airlines and for airports airports themselves. So I'm not positive, you know, to be honest, it's a great idea to allow people to drink. Flight attendants are trained to sort of manage people on the plane, but they have no idea if somebody spent 3.5 hours at the bar. But I know that a lot of people would be upset if they closed down the bar at the airport, especially when you're waiting for a 3 or 4 hour delayed flight. So, you know, I'd be on the fence on that, actually, to say whether or not they should shut that down. Right. Literally, I think the important point is that in the new generation of cell phones everywhere, the airlines need to retrain their employees, and they should be doing this anyway, on a variety of customer service issues and how to handle it. In some cases, the cell phone and the video camera alone has actually started the fight, as passengers want to, you know, take pictures of the particular staff worker, flight attendant, gate agent, or whatnot, or videotape, or take pictures of their badge. We've actually seen altercations break out because of that.
Well, this is we're heading into the big travel season. Lots of folks heading away for summer vacations or Memorial Day. Fees are hitting everybody. I know we've talked about this in the past, but what are the tips here on maybe even avoiding fees or minimizing them?
Yeah, so I put together a small list, and the first one I think most people don't realize is that somewhere between 15 and 25%, depending on where your ticket is, of your ticket prices, fees you don't really know about. There's a variety of taxes. There's a September 11th fee and a variety of others. You can't actually avoid those particular fees, but you can actually get a cheaper ticket. And the easiest way to do that is to shop, you know, approximately 3 months beforehand domestically. That's when the best time to shop is. Fly on the cheapest days Tuesday, Wednesday, Saturday, at least on half your trip, for example. So if you can actually get a cheaper ticket, you can avoid some of those fees. The fees that airlines rack up billions of dollars in revenue on are two of them, which are completely avoidable. One of them is the change fee, typically a couple hundred dollars for domestic flights, anywhere from $300 to $400 for international flights, depending on where you're going, and the bag fee. So in the case of change fees, if you have a non-refundable ticket, you just have to make your flight. Make sure you make your flight. Insurance products aren't going to help you if you actually get delayed or canceled in some cases. So you have to really check your insurance products out there. As far as the bag fees concerned, easy way is to fly an airline that doesn't charge them. The only one left is Southwest. And by the way, they don't charge a change fee either. Another is to have a branded credit card that waives those fees. And of course, the easiest way is to actually do carry-on.
Yeah, and be smart too. We've talked about this in the past. Be smart about what you're packing and know that, you know, when your carry-on might be rejected and thrown in the bin and you charge one of those, you got to be smart about all this stuff.
Oh, yeah. I mean, right, if you hit the 50-pound mark, if you have a bag that you're overstuffing and checking, those fees can be hundreds of dollars. And another easy one to avoid, too, is if you don't like to pay for a pre-assigned a seat assignment, which can be anywhere from $20 to $40, depending on the flight, you can also get your boarding pass right at the 24-hour mark, and that's when they release all the seats. So you don't have to have a middle seat that's assigned to you. You usually can get an aisle or a window. It's maybe further back in the aircraft, but you saved yourself anywhere from $60 to $80.
Good advice. So get us out of town, Rick. Anything cheap out of Chicago?
Yeah, I was looking at sort of late June travel. That's where a lot of people are actually shopping. You have, if you're heading to the Northeast, New York and Washington in the mid-100s, some of that's been driven down by some Spirit Airlines flights. The Legacy Airlines, typically about $70 more, still a good deal. You have South Florida, Miami, and Orlando in the high 100s, again, driven down by prices by some of these ultra-low-cost carriers. So if you're looking at sort of a Legacy airline like American, Delta, and United, the price about $60 more, still a good deal. If you're heading out to the West Coast, San Francisco, Los Angeles in the low 200s. And then as you get deeper into summer, the cheapest place to actually fly is Las Vegas. Now, just remember, you can fry an egg on a sidewalk as you get deeper into summer.
Sure. And so is Europe later in the summer still a good bargain too?
It's actually good. So very late in the summer and in late August is when the prices drop dramatically, but they're still pretty good deals right now for late July, for example, and early August, at least 10 to 15% cheaper than they were last year.
All right, Rick, happy travels.
Hey, thanks, Steve.
Rick Cini is the founder and CEO of FareCompare.com based out of Dallas. You can follow him on Twitter at Rick Cini and FareCompare at FareCompare.
You're listening to The Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
Good morning. Welcome back to the program on the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk. Dow futures pointing toward a positive open later on Wall Street, up about 27 points now. NASDAQ and S&P futures are up there as well. Silver and gold are flat this morning. Crude oil at $49.93 a barrel. Let's check commodities and agriculture. And Orion Samuelson is with us. Good morning, Orion.
And a good morning to you as we take a look at this world of agriculture. And trade continues to be one of the big issues facing agriculture trade agreements. So something happened on Thursday that says we're going to begin our work on renegotiating NAFTA that went into place 30 years ago and has been doing very well ever since. But a lot of the labor unions don't think so, and they wanted to see it come to an end. And so on Thursday, the U.S. Trade Representative, Robert Lighthizer, notified Congress that President Trump intends to renegotiate the North American Free Trade Agreement. And I'm liking Sonny Perdue more and more, the new Secretary of Agriculture. He has, in the past 3 weeks, been all over and has talked to a lot of different people, from school kids to FFA members to policymakers for commodity groups and so on. But his statement that came out yesterday, and I want to quote it to you. While NAFTA has been an overall positive for American agriculture, any trade deal can always be improved. As President Trump moves forward with renegotiating with Canada and Mexico, I am confident this will result in a better deal for our farmers, ranchers, foresters, and producers. When the rules are fair and the playing field is level, U.S. agriculture will succeed and lead the world. It's why we recently announced the creation of an undersecretary for trade at USDA. That from the Secretary of Agriculture yesterday, reacting to the announcement that negotiations will get underway. But the thing about trade negotiations, Steve, it's worse than watching paint dry. It takes forever to hammer out a trade agreement. We've seen that with World Trade Organization, WTO, that I think was carried on negotiation-wise for about 8 years before it was finally put into place. So I don't know. Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, Orrin, I mean, I know that there's the possibility of improving this, but isn't there also the danger of opening this thing up and making it worse?
Absolutely, there's the danger. And as I pointed out, labor has been opposed to NAFTA ever since it was enforced. And they say it cost them a lot of jobs. But according to a note from the president of the National Pork Producers Council, Ken Mashoff, who is a pork producer in Illinois, he pointed out that U.S. manufacturing exports to Canada and Mexico have increased nearly 260% over the past 23 years, and whatever they exported from the manufacturing community had to be manufactured here, while U.S. farm exports to the countries have grown by more than 150%. So we've actually increased trade of manufactured items over the past 30 years a lot more than we have agricultural trade. But it has been good. As a matter of fact, if you're a pork producer, exports to Canada and Mexico last year, Canada imported pork worth $799 million. Mexico imported U.S. pork worth nearly $1.4 billion. So they are important markets. And you're right. I hope that we don't end up with something worse in the trade negotiations on NAFTA. And the other thing I'm curious about is, where do we go from here? Trans-Pacific, of course, is gone. We pulled out of that, so I'm not sure they're going to even try to revive that one, but maybe the president is right. He's a businessman, and maybe he says if you negotiate, you can do a better job. So we'll wait and see.
Yeah. What is the status of planting here in Illinois this past week? Improvement?
Improvement. Last week, Illinois corn farmers planted 10% of the corn acres, which is up substantially from the first week of May when they planted only 2% of the corn acres. But nationally, we're pretty much on the numbers as far as acres planted by this time of the year across the country in corn and in soybeans. A little bit behind in soybeans, but that's not surprising. We want to get the corn planted first, and then we'll plant the soybeans.
All right. Well, Orrin, have a great weekend. We'll talk to you again on Monday.
Okay, thank you, Steve.
All right, Orrin Samuelson with us this morning. Now the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk Outlook for this Friday, May 19th. It's sort of a quiet day. No major government economic reports come out today, but we will see the labor ministers of the Group of 20 World Powers conclude their two-day meeting. President Trump is also getting ready for his world trip. He will head to Saudi Arabia. It is the first stop on his international trip that will also take him to the Vatican to meet with the Pope. Today, Iran holds its presidential election. President Hassan Rouhani may seek a second term to push ahead with that. Last year, struck a deal with world powers on curbing Iran's nuclear power in exchange for relief from sanctions. So Iran, the people there are getting ready to go to the polls as well. Just a few of the things that could move the markets on this Friday, May 19th.